Support for this episode of Judaism Unbound comes from the Oshman Family JCC in Palo Alto, California, whose vision is to be the architects of the Jewish future. The Oshman Family JCC is an incubator for new expressions of Jewish identity. It creates innovative Jewish learning, celebrations, and arts programs that inspire personal connections to people and ideas from across the Jewish world. Learn more at www.paloaltojcc.org. This is Judaism Unbound, episode 109, Open Doors. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And we're back again for a wrap-up conversation following five fascinating interviews related to Moshe House's Open Door Project. That's the project where Moshe House is facilitating the creation and the incubation of new organizations that are devoted basically to the area of the creation of new spiritual communities, however we might want to put it. And we really had a series of fascinating conversations. Before we jump into talking about them, we're going to ask all of you to consider making a small donation to Judaism Unbound. If you've been enjoying the show, this is a labor of love, but it's also a labor of trying to put food on our table. So we would be incredibly grateful for anyone who has been enjoying Judaism Unbound over the last 2 years to consider making even just a very small gift. We often talk about $1 per episode that you've listened to. So if you listen all the time, perhaps $50 a year would be a dollar an episode, more or less. If you only listen occasionally, maybe you'll consider a gift of $18. And if you're a philanthropist that's out there trying to support new ideas in the Jewish community, then perhaps you can offer a donation of even a larger amount. You can do that by going to www.judaismunbound.com/donate, and we're incredibly grateful for anything that you might be able to give. We also wanted to mention that we are now on Twitter. We haven't necessarily started tweeting that much, but we're working on it. We're developing our tweeting muscles. So if you are interested in what we have to say in podcast form, perhaps you're also interested in what we have to say in short written form, and you can follow us at Judaism Unbound on Twitter. And the last thing that we want to mention, because this is the last conversation, Dan and Lex conversation, that we'll be having before Passover, is Happy Passover. It's coming up in 2 weeks, and we hope it's going to be very meaningful and liberating for you, not only reenacting the physical liberation of escaping from Egypt, but hopefully also the intellectual liberation of feeling that you can make Judaism what is the most meaningful to you. So let's jump into our conversation about, or inspired by, our last bunch of conversations with George Wilichowski, the director, the founding director of the Open Door Project, and with the founders of the first four organizations that have been part of the Open Door Project. So here's where I'm at, just sort of as a starting point in reflecting on these conversations. It's bringing up for me some things that we've talked about a little bit back towards the beginning of our launching this podcast. And I think that we brought up these concepts in the first 10 episodes where we really established the sort of intellectual framework of Judaism Unbound. And having these conversations really brought them up to me even more starkly, which is, number one, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And number two, very related to that, is the idea of jobs to be done, which comes from Clayton Christensen's work. Basically, here's how I'm seeing it. You know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs says that people have a set of needs and they can only really address the higher order needs once their lower order needs have been met. So, you know, at the lowest order is things like food and shelter. And then, you know, as you go up, you get things like community and belonging. And sort of the higher order needs are things like self-actualization, like the idea of really focusing on who I am in this very deep way, which I can't really do if I don't feel secure in my food and shelter. And I have a really hard time doing if I feel that I'm not really accepted in the world, in the community that I live in, as I think many Jews felt in the 20th century. And so I think that the model of organizations of the 20th century is often built on saying, yeah, even if we can start to meet some of these higher order needs, we're still kind of basically built on this basic structure of meeting those middle level or lower level needs. And so I think the easiest one to talk about is community, right? Because your typical Jewish synagogue or even Jewish community center is basically built on this very basic idea that at the very least, we're about building community here. Why is it so important to build community? There are lots of really positive Jewish reasons that are given, but clearly one of the driving reasons was that Jews, like everybody, needed community, and they weren't able to get community elsewhere. So the very most important thing, particularly in the second half of the 20th century, because in the first half of the 20th century, there were much more basic needs like food and shelter that many, many, many Jews needed when they were new in America. In the second half of the 20th century, many, many Jews, not all, of course, were in a place where they were basically secure in terms of food and shelter, and they were looking very much for community and belonging, which they were not secure in. That basically established the structure of the synagogue, of the Jewish community center as we know it. And then moving into the 21st century, you can imagine that option number one is to reimagine a synagogue that is more exciting in some way. But option number two is to really almost start from scratch and build new kinds of organizations that take as a given that Jews are getting their needs for food, shelter, and the lower order needs met elsewhere in the world. They're not needing that from a Jewish provider. Again, this is not true for all Jews by any stretch of the imagination. And that they're getting their need for belonging and community met somewhere else as well. So these new organizations, it strikes me, the ones that the Open Door Project is sponsoring, it seems to me that in many ways, they are fundamentally built to say, how can we primarily be there to meet that highest level of human needs, which is self-actualization? And we're really here to help people become the people that they want to be.
I really want to underscore a few things you just said. One, I mean, because I've been thinking about Maslow's hierarchy also. It's not about just that we've sort of overemphasized in general everything that isn't at the top level. It's that I think we overemphasize specifically that belonging level, which is in the middle. Because it's not that either you or I or any of the people we just spoke to have any interest in eliminating or reducing Jewish organizations that are specifically working to, as you said before, in a different context, put food on people's table in a literal sense. I think to many episodes we've had, including, you know, Footsteps, which helps people that don't have that need met, who have left ultra orthodoxy and who absolutely need basic education, basic shelter, food. I mean, we want those things to happen. So I really want to hone in on this community piece, because A, Ari Mofik so beautifully encapsulated that, and I'd recommend her Eli talk to anybody who wants to think more about what community is and isn't. But these four organizations are not satisfied simply with being community organizations that bring people together that are Jews and that, you know, do something. They're clearly striving for deeper than that. They're not saying, oh, you know, we have to either do a social program that people will come to, or, you know, Jewish content, which is only going to get the diehards. That's a frame I hear all the time, that, you know, oh, like most people, they don't want to do text, or they don't want to do like anything particularly deep. They want to have a Jewish event at a bar or at a restaurant or whatever with other Jews and meet other Jews. And these organizations are saying, A, people want to do those things with Jews and with people who aren't Jewish, and we can be part of doing that. And B, absolutely, people are desiring something deeper. They might not specifically desire the ways that text study or that Jewish learning or that Jewish holiday observance, whatever, have been done by many Jewish institutions, but maybe that reflects not on the people's interest in Jewish content, but on specific ways of engaging people in that content that aren't effective.
I want to double down on something that you said at the beginning of your last comment, where you said that these organizations are not satisfied with being only communities, but they also want to do these other things. And at least in the case of Because Jewish, Dan Ain's organization, and Cohere, Ari Mofik's organization, and by the way, I want to make clear that neither of us speaks for them. We're only speaking inspired by them because they could very well totally disagree with everything that we're going to say. So I kind of feel that in both of those cases, whether the founders actually hope one day to build community in the way that we usually think of community as this sort of large group of people or not, I'm not really sure. But it feels to me like what they're offering is something that could work without community, meaning that it's not only that they're hoping for community plus, I'm suggesting that they're not even necessarily hoping or needing community. And it seems to me that in the same way that late 20th century Jewish institutions said, we're going to get ourselves out of the business largely of providing for basic needs, and we're going to move into the business of providing belonging and community. It seems to me like why don't the 21st century organizations say, hey, now we're going to get out of the psychological needs business and we're going to move totally into the self-actualization, self-fulfillment needs business. That's what struck me especially about what, as I heard how what Dan Ain was describing, right? Because he's, in my interpretation, he's describing a Jewish organization that fundamentally works more like a festival, right? Or like he talked about a revival, right? That you may encounter it only occasionally, not every Shabbat. And in fact, I loved how he talked about how the only reason why Bruce Springsteen can be Bruce Springsteen is because he doesn't play to the same audience every night. If he had to try to provide something new to the same audience every night or even multiple times a year, he wouldn't be able to do it. What would it look like if Judaism functioned that way? But the point is that it opens up our thinking to say, what would it look like if the Jewish community truly embraced the idea not only that we are getting into the self-actualization business, but that we're getting out of the community and belonging business, right? And I think that would be like a totally mind-blowing, profound question to put out there and to spin out and say, well, what would that look like if we actually took that seriously?
In my own experience, when you find something that's deeply meaningful on that self-actualization level or on that world actualization level or justice level, you end up forging communities very quickly. And they said that, like a bunch of people in the same room, ultimately doing their own project and creating their own expression, still end up feeling a sense of connection that I would argue they probably wouldn't if it's the same people gathered at a happy hour in the same, I mean, maybe they might with one or two people, but the idea of building a collective or a community, like, that's a way to do it. You all shared an experience, even though you were each doing it separately. And then, you know, that grows into something. Like, my closest communities that I have are, you know, just my local group of friends. And then people I've met through activism. That's what I think organizations want to build. They don't want to build a bunch of people that small talk with each other. That's not what synagogues mean when they say community or what federations mean or whatever. But, like, counterintuitively, the organizations that are succeeding at producing it, like the ones that we've spoken to, aren't actually focusing on it as their primary goal. It's definitely just something that they know will be a nice byproduct.
What you're talking about is that some form of community actually exists on both sides of self-actualization, which is usually at the top of that pyramid. On the lower side, meaning the more basic side of self-actualization, is this idea of community that I think is what late 20th century synagogues and American Jewish institutions were fundamentally about, which is saying people need community because otherwise they are alone, right? Because otherwise they are cast out. And in a world in which Jews could not join country clubs or whatever organizations were there that functioned in American society to make people feel not alone as human beings, synagogues could actually say, hey, we offer this. You know, we offer community. And I think that one of the reasons why people today, young people in particular, feel like look askance when synagogues say we offer community or we're warm and welcoming, you know, is because they're saying, I am looking for community, meaning I'm looking to be in relationship with others, but it's not primarily because I'm lonely and I need community in my life. I have that outside of the Jewish parts of my life. But if you're saying that we could do something intensely that would be truly meaningful to me as an individual, and I would then get to hang out with other individuals who also find this really meaningful, we would naturally build a collective sense of identity and community together. That's sort of a version of community that actually I could see being higher order than self-actualization. That's a kind of community that I would argue that synagogues have not traditionally been in the business of providing, except for a small number of people who are really devoted to the ideological beliefs of that particular denomination, let's say, or the people who love to go to synagogue all the time. I think that those folks actually did get that higher order level of community in the late 20th century. The problem is that both of them got called community, and I think there's a lot of confusion among the two kinds of community. So the people who go to synagogue all the time and have that higher order community sort of imagine that that's somehow something that they could give to anybody who walks in the door by being warm and welcoming, but that's not the case. So what I'm trying to say is that I think that synagogues do offer community as part of what they offer. They actually offer community today in the really good way that we're talking about, in the really high order way, right? They offer it for the people who find their own self-actualization needs met by being a, for example, a traditional conservative Jew who goes to synagogue every week and keeps kosher, like that group of members at the conservative synagogue. They see each other every week at services, and they come to like each other because they actually have a lot in common. And if one of them should suffer a tragedy, of course, the entire group would pour out to support them. And that is wonderful. And that's exactly what that kind of community can be. And that's also what the other kind of community is, like, right, the lower order community that's really just there about intimate relationships and friends and a feeling of security as being part of a group. It's providing that for the people who go all the time. But I think that the way that synagogues and other types of Jewish organizations talk about themselves is like as if they somehow offer community as a commodity that, you know, if you pay the membership dues, you're going to have access to. You know, and Erwin Kula talked about that as just not true. It's not because people all of a sudden hate Judaism, I think. It's because they're getting those needs met more easily and more straightforwardly somewhere else. I think that this really connects to the whole jobs to be done idea. Just to remind folks that the basic idea here is to imagine that the person that we seek to serve is like an organization that has a job opening available. And the question is whether they're going to hire you, in this case, Judaism, to do that job in their life. And so I think that the idea in jobs to be done, when you're trying to think about how do I even think this way, is to ask the job that I think the person has to do in their life, who are they currently hiring? You know, who are they currently trying to get that need met from? And if people are walking around feeling totally self-actualized in the world, then I might say, look, maybe there's no continuing need for Judaism. But I think that the reality is that people are not getting those self-actualization needs met very well. They're trying, and how are they trying? Maybe with going to concerts, maybe with taking drugs, maybe with, you know, all kinds of other possibilities that are good or bad, you know. But I think that for the most part, most people are not actually getting the job done in their life well enough with the alternatives that they are hiring. And again, that's where you see an opportunity. If we think Judaism has the tools to meet those needs and people have those needs and they're not getting the job done and they're trying to hire other things to do it, but it's not really getting them where they need to go, the opportunity there is to say, how can I build something Jewish that can do that?
Pivoting a little, we've used Maslow's hierarchy a lot, and we are going to continue using it because I think all these conversations are important. But where I think it falls short for our time and hopefully for future times too, is that it ends with self-actualization, that the peak of it in a literal sense. And I know we've said lower is not necessarily like lower, worse, but it does peak with self-actualization. It sends the implicit message that that's sort of the biggest thing that one can do for themselves. And I want there to be that next level or something of justice, of beyond, because what everybody says when you ask them what's most meaningful to them and when they've had experiences of holiness or whatever, like they all say it's almost trite at this point. Like, I felt part of something bigger than myself. You ask people what God is, and often they might say, I don't really believe in the old man in the sky. I believe in something bigger than myself. And I'm not saying that to dismiss it. I've used similar language, and I think it's true. But, like, the bigger than myself button often relates to being part of a global consciousness, being part of something that's not just yourself. That's a need for people. I don't know that it's a need for every person, but I know I experience that as a need. And Jewish institutions have gleaned that that's a need. I'm not the first one to say that we should have more social justice, etc. But one thing I was sort of wrapping my mind around in these recent conversations with the Open Door folks is that they're nailing the self-actualization. That's why we featured them. I mean, they're bringing people to do incredible creative work connected to Jewish stuff, and it's a rhythm part of their life every few weeks, or they're going to concerts on a, like, every other month basis, or whenever there's somebody interesting, like, really powerful stuff. I didn't get the sense from all of them that justice was also sort of a big ticket piece for them. And look, not every organization can do everything. It's not a knock on them. We continue to think they're some of the best organizations out there. But if we can start to think of social justice not as some side project that, oh yeah, there's people that want to do that, so we should probably have, you know, a can drive or something, but something that's actually driving the processes of what we call Judaism, then I think people will start to be interested in what that is. Will they then walk into the synagogue? I don't know. But there's tons of people who, without institutions, are saying things like Judaism is at the core of my desire to better the world, or tikkun olam, repairing the world, is what I see as the most important part of Judaism, et cetera, et cetera. That has to be part of our hierarchy, our pyramid, because if we only look at it as that which is contributing to our sense of self, then we're missing a piece. We're missing a huge piece of what it means to be human, and I hope to be Jewish.
Well, so I don't know if, you know, this is going to cheapen what you're talking about, but I was just thinking about a metaphor as we've been talking, because just this morning before we recorded, I was struggling with my internet and cable provider to figure out, you know, how to rearrange my home services in such a way that it would meet my needs, you know, and I had been getting all three of my services through Comcast, which are, right, internet, TV, and landline telephone. Don't judge me.
Stop the presses. JTA tomorrow morning. Judaism Unbound host has landline.
But what was interesting to me is that having the conversation where I was trying to say to Comcast, I want only internet, and I actually, you know, want the fastest internet that I can get because I have a job where fast internet helps me do my job well. So I want to have really fast internet. I want to have the cheapest landline that I can have because we barely ever use it. And I don't want any TV because, you know, it turns out, you know, because for me, I'm getting my TV in a different way. But imagine that you were a person who just didn't watch any TV. So I have this conversation with the Comcast person, and she's saying to me, you know, wouldn't you want to have some channels? And I'm like, no, I don't want any channels. She said, well, like, what's your favorite channel? You know, and I'm like, no, I don't want to have this conversation about what's my favorite channel. I just don't want any TV. Like, could you just give it to me without any TV? And they're kind of like kicking and screaming, right? They ultimately are willing to give me what I'm asking for, which is no TV. But, you know, I'm sitting there on the phone wishing, like, if there was just another company that, you know, actually could just give me internet, you know, and I deal with the phone another way. And, you know, the whole way that it's structured is to say, like, but Comcast, right, they were originally a TV company. So, right, they're totally, you know, unhinged with the idea that you don't want to have any TV, right? And I feel like the analog in the Jewish world, right, is that...
Analog.
Analog, yeah, G-U-E, is that the sort of 20th century organizations, like, you know, again, take a synagogue as just a prime example. It's not that they don't offer social justice, for example. It's just that they're used to offering social justice as kind of an add-on. on, whereas, you know, for them, the TV is the worship service, you know? And so they're, so if I come and I say, but I want only the social justice, they're like, well, we can tell you, you don't have to come to the worship service that often, you know, can't we just sell you like the High Holidays package, you know? and I'm like, well, could I just consider getting just the social justice? It's actually like right in the same way that I was saying, I want to have the fastest internet I can possibly get. I'm willing to pay the extra money to get the fastest internet, but I don't want to pay the extra money to get like a bunch of TV channels that I'm not going to watch. It's not that I want to be like a very limited bandwidth Jew. I actually want to be a high bandwidth Jew, right? I want to have the most of my meaning. I would love to get my life's meaning from Judaism. And I am totally committed to social justice. So if you could provide me a way of connecting Jewishly that gives me like 10 times as much social justice as the members of the synagogue are currently getting, like I will pay happily in all kinds of ways for that, right? I'll pay with money, I'll pay with attendance, I'll pay in all these ways, but please don't sell me the package that includes the worship services. But what I think we're seeing in the Open Door Project world is the willingness of, in this case, I think the funder and the sponsor, the funder being the 1-8 Foundation and the sponsor being Moshe House, to say, hey, we're willing to actually incubate these organizations that are kind of in the same basic business that we imagine synagogues to be, right? In the sort of spirituality, meaning-making business, however we want to put it. But we're really not going to pressure them to offer the worship service, you know, weekly worship service, for example, if that's not what they want to do, right? If they want to be the organization that comes to town and is, you know, provides only internet, right? We want to facilitate that and help them turn that into a spiritual practice, right? Because there are Jewish organizations that are devoted to social justice for sure, but they're not necessarily, in most cities at least, providing the sort of functional alternative to a synagogue in the sense that you could really go every week and you could really get deep spiritual fulfillment and there's ritual or whatever, it would be a different ritual, right? That's not really, for the most part, how the social justice Jewish organizations have seen themselves.
Here's what I see when I look out at the justice-driven equivalents, the internet-only package that you're talking about that is focusing solely and specifically on social justice. And, you know, they also offer other things that's the equivalent of their internet. You know, they might do a holiday thing every once in a while that would be the center of some other organization, but is a side project for them. So what I see, I think of really cool organizations. In North Carolina, there's a project called Carolina Jews for Justice that was very much involved regularly in the Moral Mondays movement. I'm using past tense, but I think they still are, as far as I know, in a lot of political action work in North Carolina from a progressive lens. There's a similar project in Detroit that I've heard about that's another Jews for Justice type piece. There's, of course, national organizations, Bend the Arc that we've talked to, the RAC through the reform movement that we've talked to. But what's interesting to me, especially when I think about the local versions, because this is almost always the case, when there's local projects doing justice work, it's that framing. It's Jews for Justice. It's like the set of people that are Jewish that stand for a particular issue. And yes, they might ground it in Jewish tradition. They might do a Seder. But still, there seems to be underneath the surface this idea that it's Jews who are interested in this thing that, yes, it relates to Judaism, but like it's somehow not as Jewish-y as Shabbat or as Rosh Hashanah or whatever, or the Talmud, whatever our most Jewy sounding things are. I do think If Not Now is an interesting example of a social justice project that is not saying, you know, we're a bunch of Jews for the end of the occupation. Like, I mean, we are also saying that, but like, it's definitely an organization that sees Judaism at the core of what it does. So maybe I'm underestimating it, but I still don't see that as a prevailing norm. Because you look around, I can find you every small town to mid-sized city around the country, and they have 1 to 3 to 5 synagogues. They don't have 1 to 3 to 5 Jewish justice
exactly
things. They don't.
if we were dropped on an alien planet, like a big crew of a few thousand Jews, and our task, well, this is a weird hypothetical, but bear with me, but our task is to start a new Jewish community from scratch. I'm thinking of the beginning of the Scarlet Letter, where it says that whenever somebody starts a new town, they always build the cemetery and the prison. That's one of the first two circumstances. But I'm thinking of that. Like, if we're doing that as a Jewish community, I feel like we'd probably have the cemetery. That's historically something that Jewish communities have set up pretty early. But then we'd be like, okay, we got to start the synagogue. That's like the first Jewish thing that you set up. And once again, I'm talking descriptively how I think most people would approach this situation, not normatively, because normatively I would want to start the justice thing very, very early on. But like,
I think that most people, they'd be like, well, okay, we're starting a Jewish community from scratch. You start with the synagogue, then like maybe the Federation, if you get a little bigger, then, you know, a Young and Jewish division, then a Jewish seniors home, that like, and then seventh or eighth Jewish justice thing. We'd love to have that. Cool. It's not the first or second or third thing. And I experience it as the first or second or third thing that a lot of Jews would like from Jewish life. So that disconnect is big. And I'm hopeful. I'm not saying this from a pessimistic place. I really do think that organizations like these Open Door ones are at a place where they would do it. I'm hopeful that as we recognize that, we do start to move in a direction where Carolina Jews for Justice isn't unique around the country.
Yeah, I think that as you were talking about the what's the alternative to we're Jews for justice is something like a justice Judaism, right? The Judaism is about justice, and you and Jews and non-Jews alike could participate in it. It's not the thing that the organization is saying. It's not a advocacy organization. It's not an organization making a claim on what Judaism is. It's an organization just practicing Judaism. But their practice is justice. What we're seeing in the organizations that we've talked to is that they are kind of doing that around a particular focus area. So, you know, I think the Jewish Studio Project is so interesting. They're also, you know, committed in a serious way to justice being integrated into an integral to what they're doing. But when you kind of think of it, what you're seeing is that they have the potential to sort of create this way of being Jewish in which creativity is fundamentally the most central act of your Jewish practice in a way, something like that, right? Yeah. And to me, it's like, what would be the equivalent of that with justice, you know? And it's sometimes hard to talk about these things because, you know, you don't really know it until you see it. But I think that we're conditioned, and we're talking about justice, but I think that's just one example of many, including creativity, right? Where if you think about them in a Jewish context at all, you think, oh, Judaism is supportive of that. That's a great add-on to Judaism, as opposed to that's the central dimension of Judaism. In a few weeks, we're going to talk to Jeff Middleman, who's working on science as a more central way of kind of thinking about how that fits into being Jewish and maybe building a Jewish life around. I mean, the challenge that we have, I think, is because of the general education of Jews today and the diverse education of Jews today, what we're going to find is that there isn't going to be a single silver bullet here. There's going to be all kinds of Jewish people. And I think that what we'll find is that many of them are going to want their Judaism to have at its very center the thing that gives them the most fulfillment, the most self-actualization. And in the case of an artist, that's going to be art. In the case of a musician, that's going to be music. In the case of a person who's deeply devoted to social justice, it's going to be social justice, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, we've done a lot of reflection this episode on what we want to see change. But I want to make sure, because we're rounding out, that we also just like sing some praises of what we saw in these five episodes that were really special and that we want to see more of. And without getting too linear and here's the first episode, blah, 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 like I was reminded of something that I don't get reminded of enough in George Wilichowski's episode, because he told his own story that was so powerful about how he grew up in a context where there were a bunch of Jews. He was not one of them. And they, you know, he'd hang out with Jews on Friday night, and there were these magic spells that would be said over candlelight, and you'd go to be mitzvah, and there'd be, you know, all sorts of interesting rituals and families hugging and crying and like all this beautiful stuff that we just take for granted as, oh yeah, that's Jewish. And you know, we do this too. We take that for granted and we talk about all the ways that we could be even better than that. But it was just so beautiful to hear somebody who their reaction to Judaism when they saw it was, wow, this is so crazy. This is so cool. I want to be part of it. And then he was. And he went through that process. And we got to remind ourselves, and I'm really saying we because I don't do this enough. It's not a critique on other people. Like, I and we need to remind ourselves of that more often. We need to hold that people do like stuff about Judaism. And this is powerful vitamins for our soul and our mind and our whatever. And also, by the way, it's a toolbox that allows us to create our new contributions to that set of special things, such that it's not just what we already have in the bar mitzvahs, in the Shabbat dinners, etc. So that's one teaching that I got from these episodes that was really important. Another was from Dan Ain, and we spoke about this a little, just the powerful spiritual value that can come in a space that's musical. We talked about this with the Jewish Studio Project too, in a space that's musical and intentional about that music being channeled towards something deep, meaningful, special. And I don't want a Jewish community that is built on what you get in Shabbat services or in holidays is so much better than what you get at a Grateful Dead concert. We have the best thing. No, we should be saying, what you get at a Grateful Dead concert, or, I mean, it's not even just Grateful Dead. I'm hesitant to use them because, like, I think it's most concerts of any musician that you like. It's not unique to their culture. What you get from an experience of deep community in a room full of loud people sharing a song, singing along, experiencing, like, physically the vibrations of the beat, like, that's a powerful and even religious or deep or whatever word experience. And it's not that we're competing with that. It's that we can utilize that in conjunction with what we're doing. And so I love that Dan Ain is doing that. And I hope that we can see more examples of it elsewhere, because New York's got lots of possibilities, obviously, but I can't think of any community around the country that wouldn't benefit from a creative attempt to jive the two theoretically separate but not really separate worlds of rock music, or, you know, whether it's rock or some other genre, music and Jewishness, Judaism.
What struck me, for example, when we were talking to Dan Ain was that the idea that, you know, what if it became the norm that every week, instead of going to the same synagogue and experiencing the same service and the same rabbi's sermon, you know, that the expectation was that either we go around to different synagogues or different non-synagogues every week, or that we go to the same gathering place, the same synagogue. And by the way, I think it's so important to point out that synagogues didn't originate as worship spaces. They became that during the period of Rabbinic Judaism, and they might become something else in the future. So just to say a synagogue doesn't necessarily mean a synagogue as we know it today, but that we might gather in certain local communal gathering spaces or perhaps online, and a rotating group of people will come through there and provide a new kind of experience every week. You know, I imagine,
yeah.
I mean, this
Sixth
would be-
and I does, sorry to interrupt, but Sixth and I in DC is one example that does that. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it should be way more of a norm that we rotate.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an interesting, like, life. I think not necessarily the best life for a rabbi, for example, to kind of live like Bruce Springsteen, right? And to kind of go to another city every night. So I think we have to think about, you know, the sanity of our spiritual leaders or spiritual providers, right, or whatever we want to call it. And I appreciated that Dan called our attention to that as well. But I think it's just so fascinating to imagine that we could have, that maybe what people are looking for today, maybe part of the needs that people are exploring today is that variety is actually more what people need than community, right? Or in that older way, right? And maybe having exposure to much more Jewish variety would be interpreted by people as really cool. And if that's the case, how would they get that? How would that affect the various models of financing the Jewish community that we have up till now? Because that doesn't really work so well with a membership model, which imagines that it's going to use the membership dues to pay a full-time staff. But maybe there are other models. You know, obviously, the idea that you have your Jewish experience in an art studio of all places, right? And that your experience of Judaism is that you didn't only come out having said a bunch of words, but you came out having produced a piece of art. It's just a remarkably different way of thinking about what it means to be Jewish, what it's like to be Jewish. And again, you know, as we say a million times on the show, we've been there before. I mean, if you would ask anybody in the Temple times to, you know, come in a time machine and flash forward to, you know, 1973 suburban Long Island synagogue, they would be absolutely shocked that this has nothing to do with Judaism, you know? And so I think it's really exciting to imagine what that looks like in 2073 and how we could look back and say that some of our recent guests' projects were the ones that caught fire and turned into that other way of being Jewish.
I love that. And I mean, what you just described in terms of sort of a rotating or an organization that would rotate its offerings and it would be different variety. Like, that's what I do. Like, I don't think I'm the majority of the Jewish world. I do think we still have, of people that are participating in Jewish life, mostly people that have sort of a home base. And yeah, they'll go to the other places here and there. But like Valerie and I are members of a synagogue and we go there. But when I actually like tabulated my head how often I'm there, I'm not sure that I'm there more than a few other institutional contexts Jewishly. Like, I absolutely on Wednesday will say to Val, like, what do we want to do for Shabbat this week? It's not default we're going to the congregation we're members of. We do go there sometimes. We like it. But then we also go to different. There is not a single, I can say this with full confidence, there's not a single service on the planet, including one I would lead. And it could be service. It could be activity. It could be any realm of Jewish stuff. There's not a single one that I want to do six Friday nights in a row. There's just not. Like, maybe that's me. Like, I do think there are people for whom that pattern and that rhythm can be valuable. For me, there's just not a single one that I want to do that many times in a row. I get bored with the same melodies. If we're doing the same responsive readings, I get extra bored. If we're like, even if it's the same format and different, like I'm okay with that, but I start to get antsy. Like, and so absolutely, I float around and bump around and like. Val and I, people recognize us in a variety of different spaces, but we're not the central people in any of them. I and Val, we're not looking to like have a Jewish space that is like ours and where we are the center of it. Every once in a while, yeah, we host a holiday thing in our house, and then we're the center of the thing, and it's our friends, and that's great. Needs a strong word. I desire that and enjoy that a few times a year. And that's good for me. If I wanted more of that, I'd probably look to be a congregational rabbi or something. I don't know. But like, I think there's more people out there like that than we think, and more very deeply engaged Jewish people out there than we think, for whom the only reason they're not doing that more regularly is because we don't have systems in place where like, if I like paid a flat fee and I was like a partial member of a bunch of organizations in Providence and like, it was fine for me to show, like, that should exist to me. I don't know what the exact model is, where you become sort of part of a Jewish ecosystem without saying, this is my institution. This is where I reside. And then sure, when my congregation doesn't have a thing and the other congregation does, sure, I'll go there on that occasion. But like, no, I want to float. Anyway, that's a long tangent to say, I think the variety piece that you identified is really important.
the one thing that I want to put my finger on in terms of what you're saying is like what you just described is like so sort of the opposite of what has often been described as like the virtues of Judaism, right? The virtues of Judaism is that you can come to any synagogue anywhere in the world and they're saying exactly the same prayers and the tunes are comfortable, right? There's this way that Judaism has been presented that it's kind of comfortable. It's like putting on an old pair of shoes and that that's its virtue. And I think it's so important that you're articulating, and I agree with you, that that virtue is actually not what we are looking for. And it's not because of some philosophical reason. It just somehow doesn't work for us personally. That probably has a lot to do with our personalities, but I think it more so has to do with the world in which we live today, in which variety is experienced more as a virtue and diversity is experienced more as a virtue. And so a Judaism that's primarily about being the same every time is kind of the opposite of what's likely to work and what's likely to do the jobs that people are looking to do in their lives. And again, you could see that as a terrible situation that is kind of, you know, the death of Judaism, or you could see it as a remarkable opportunity to say, after 3,000 years, Judaism's actually accumulated quite a lot of stuff, and it actually does have the capacity to provide a different experience every week. So so I think that's a really remarkable way to close on that note that, you know, maybe we're looking at something really, really quite different from the way we've talked about Judaism on a lot of levels.
Without going too far into it, we've covered so many bases. We won't cover too many more. We're going to close out. But like, for me, I still have that comfort zone. But the comfort for me is like the general, what I've talked about is the rhythm of the year, the calendar, knowing that I certainly do something for Purim. I don't want it to be the same every year. Like the comfort is not that Megillah is chanted with this trope and we make noises at this moment and that we eat these foods, and that we like, that's nice occasionally. But what I'm stimulated most by is when there's like a general basic framework of, okay, like something that I have heard of before. And then I'm mostly excited when I go into a space and I have no idea what's going to happen. And once again, that's not everybody, but it's many people, many more than we might expect. So on that note, we're going to close out this Open Doors episode and hopefully in the process actually verb that phrase, open some doors. I think you could hear that title of this episode either as a noun, like an adjective open door, an adjective open describing doors, like, oh, here are some open doors that we just spoke about with the Open Door Project. Or you could hear it as, yo, imperative sentence, everyone, open doors. And I kind of like both of those. So on that note, we are going to close this out and just say that we'd love to hear from you in terms of what resonated with you in this episode and this past block of episodes in general with our podcast. And there's a few ways for you to be in touch with us and do that. And the first is that you can head to our Facebook page, Judaism Unbound. You can also follow us on Twitter at Judaism Unbound. You can email us at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. And if any of those avenues fail, you can, of course, also go to our website, judaismunbound.com. The last plug we like to make is that you can always support us with a financial donation, either on a once-a-month recurring basis or just a one-time gift, and you can do either of those at judaismunbound.com/donate. So thanks so much for listening, and with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.